to suggestion. Very truly I tell you, you will see heaven opened, God revealed in other words, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. Curtain. Act 1, scene 1 is complete. They've been calling Jesus a lot of things. The Messiah, Son of God, King of Israel, the one about whom the prophets spoke, Son of God. They've been calling him all these things, which are true, but they're only true, says John, if they are understood in the perspective of this title. This mysterious title that we've got to find out about. The others we think we know. This one we don't. They didn't. This one stands out as a... What's that mean? And since we don't know, we have to find out. We have to find out by watching Jesus. We have to learn what this one means. We've got a bit of background to it, which I'll give you in a moment. But it's quite mysterious. And we will only find out what he means by Son of Man if we keep watching the Gospel and watching Jesus. Finally, the Son of Man is lifted up from the earth in the crucifixion. Then only then will we know. Then you will know, he says, that I am he. But for the moment, he says, very truly I tell you, in other words, listen, don't miss this. You will see heaven opened. So we can all pray for that, that the darkness will go and the revelation will come to us. And you'll see the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. Before I look at the title, which I'll conclude the night with, Son of Man, I want to read you a lovely story from the book of Genesis, which is behind that phrase. The angels of God ascending and descending. I think you know it, but I'm reading from Genesis chapter 28, and this is the story of Jacob, Israel, that is, the man we've just been talking about. Jacob, when he went to Bethel and he went to sleep on a rock in this place and had a dream. Jacob left Beersheba, set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and he lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Clear reference, of course. There above it stood the Lord, that's always Yahweh, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth and will spread out to the west and the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you. I will watch over you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from the sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't know it. He was afraid and he said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. Hebrew, Beth-El. This is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone that he had placed under his head, set it up as a pillar, and poured oil, consecrating it. a very, very ancient story from the oral tradition of Bethel, which accounts for the sacred site in the very centre of Palestine, some 5 or so kilometres north of Jerusalem. So here, in Jesus' statement, there's a ladder too, reaching from earth to heaven. And I don't have to, I think you can guess what the ladder will emerge as in the gospel story. It's the cross, joining heaven and earth, on which we see the Son of Man. Let me tell you for 5-10 minutes now, as best I can, show you some texts to introduce you to this term, the Son of Man, in case it's completely unfamiliar to you. Basically, what we've got to do is go back to the book of Daniel. The book of Daniel has a long history and it's quite complex. I won't do it here, but I'll ask you to believe me when I tell you that the book of Daniel was brought together, published, written, but written from ancient material too, about this obscure prophet, about whom only the name is known, called Daniel, who was a prophet at the time of the exile. And there were stories about him that you've read, and the three men in the furnace of Nebuchadnezzar and all that stories, and they are in the book as well. But the book itself, with a lot of these legends and stories that are poetically and dramatically expressed, is brought and formed as a book at the time, only about 160 years before Jesus, at the time of the Syrian invasion of Antiochus Epiphanes IV, who came in and put a statue of Zeus in the altar, in the altar of incense in the Holy of Holies, and conquered Jerusalem. And that's when the Maccabees rose up, and there was a period of revolt for 3 years, which was finally successful, etc., etc. So all I need to say is that, because in this book there are dreams, visions of the night, where the author, talking about this ancient prophet, imagines the prophet seeing what's happening in his own time. And it's a literary form which is there to encourage the people to say that whatever's happening to you, you're in God's hands. Even though you're being persecuted, even though things are going terribly for you, God is looking after you. Keep believing and don't give up your faith just to avoid persecution by the Syrians. Hold on to your faith and your traditions. That's the meaning of the book. One of the dreams is, I saw one like a son of man coming on the clouds of heaven. It describes this vision. It's the last judgment. And when the books were opened, the books that God opens, all the books that tell all our story, the one, this Son of Man, is given power and glory and might, and he's the one who's victorious, whereas the powerful of the earth are put down. Then when it describes the meaning of the dream in chapter 7 of the book of Daniel, the Son of Man is presented as a heavenly picture of the people of Israel who are being persecuted at the time. The Son of Man is the heavenly counterpart of the poor, broken, faithful, trusting, ordinary, loving mums and dads who are trying to hold on to their faith and being massacred by this army from Syria. It's the author's way of saying, I can see in heaven that you, the ordinary, broken people, you will be the ones given might and power and glory. God will love you and give you eternal life, not the ones who are winning this battle. So don't give up your faith, hold on to it. So the Son of Man is a title Jesus uses. The Son of Man always means that one who comes from heaven, the Word was made flesh, is the one who comes from heaven and identifies with the poor, the persecuted, the lonely, the broken, those who cry to God in their distress. The ordinary people who are struggling for truth. And Jesus clearly in his ministry identifies with such. Son of Man always holds that meaning. In fact, in the middle of our gospel, when the blind man, the man born blind, finally meets Jesus after he's been cured, Jesus asks him the key question which comes out of the early creeds of the church. Not the early creeds, but the early invitations of the church prior to the creeds. Jesus says, "Do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you believe in the Word made flesh? Do you believe in the human Jesus? Do you believe in this Jesus who identifies with the broken and the poor and the humble? Is that what you believe in?" I'll just look ahead a little for a few moments into some texts that are going to come. In John, he has a special colour to this word that's particular to his gospel. They all agree basically on the meaning of the term, but John has some special things, and one of them is that the Son of Man has come down from heaven to reveal God's judgment now. John has I don't think he has any interest in the final judgment. The final judgment, as in all the Gospels, it happens now. Time isn't anything to do with this. In Matthew, the final judgment is, "I was hungry and you gave me to eat." So we're judged now by what we do now. We don't have to wait for some mystery that might happen later. Well, here in Jesus, I'll read from Jesus' words, chapter 5. "Just as the Father has life in himself, he has granted the Son also to have life in himself. And he's given him authority to execute judgment because he is the Son of Man. Because he knows of what we are made, because he shares our humanity, because he is like us in all things but sin. He is the one who judges." Now, he doesn't judge us, like put us there and make a judgment. He's the one by whom we're judged, against whom we're judged. Look at his life and look at mine, and that's my judgment. Have I let him live in my life? It's yours too. We're judged by the way we accept or reject him, by the way we allow him to live in us, or we live contrary to what he reveals life and love and God to be. We judge ourselves, in other words. He comes to give judgment. He comes to give life. "Do not work for the food that perishes," says Jesus, "but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. Very truly, I tell you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man, unless you nourish yourself by his life, his humanity, unless you drink his blood, unless you accept his life poured out for you," it's metaphorical, of course, spiritual and very beautiful meaning, "unless you drink it in and nourish yourself on this, what's revealed in Jesus, in the Son of Man, you will not have life in you." Again, Jesus says, "What if you were to see the Son of Man ascending to where he was before? It is the Spirit that gives life. The flesh is useless. The words that I have spoken to you are Spirit and life." And finally, John's focus, when he talks about the Son of Man, is always on the cross. In fact, it was on the cross when it first appeared in that verse 51. The ladder joining heaven and earth, subtly but truly present, is the cross. Here it is here in chapter 3. "No one has ascended into heaven except the one who descended from heaven, the Son of Man. Just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the desert, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whoever believes in him may have eternal life." When you've lifted up the Son of Man, then you will realize that I am he, and that I do not nothing on my own, but I speak these things as the Father instructed me. And finally, "The hour has come," says Jesus, at the end of the public ministry, "the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. for the Son of Man to radiate the beauty of who God really is, and he does it on the cross. Not because he's on a cross, but because being on a cross, he loves unto death. And the love reveals who God really is. By that we're judged, by our rejection or acceptance of that, obviously. But Jesus came that we may accept it.